outcomes from a business legal case in China. Global from Asia number 117.
Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Happy Tuesday morning, everybody. The weather just doesn't seem to know what to do over here in the south of China. It was really freezing cold in January, like record lows. And my buddy Simon from Thailand came over for some business in February, and it was a little bit warm, but he said it was too cold for him and flew back basically the next day, took a much shorter trip than expected. And it did warm up in late February, but now here in mid-March, I'm wearing two jackets. There's no internal heating in most places, and that's just what we got to do here. So I hope it warms up soon, and usually it's only cold for a couple weeks here, so this is definitely a colder and longer period of time than I remember. But I am keeping hot with our cross-border summit conference. Every day, some new news coming. Again, that's Saturday, April 16th, and some news is InvestHK is backing us, and they're going to be coming over, bringing more visitors from the Hong Kong side into Shenzhen, so it's pretty exciting stuff. You can always get the full details about the conference, and I hope to see you there at crossbordersummit.com. All right, and now for today's show, we have back with us Steve Marsh. He was way back in episode number 24. If you want to go in the archives and listen, you can listen to that and get some more insights. When we were talking then, he was giving a lot of information about how he got started in China with his import-export business. And at the end of the show, he was mentioning how he was just getting into a lawsuit with one of his ex-staff who basically took his customer list and started their own business and competed directly with them, emailing his customers, trying to get them to switch. And so Steve was kind enough while he was here in Shenzhen again, traveling on business, to spend some time with me and share what happened since that lawsuit. And a lot of stuff's happened with him and his businesses and everything. So lots of good tidbits, and I really appreciate him coming on and being so open. So let's listen in. Okay, welcome everybody. We are in the Hilton of Sheko, Shenzhen, and we have with us a former guest, Steve Marsh. Thanks for being here, Steve.
Thanks, Mike. How's everything going?
Things are good. We're missing you on this side of the earth, and I'm excited to have you back on the show. Maybe quickly introduce people what you're doing right now.
Well, wow, when was the last time we talked? 2 years ago? So, wow, 2 years ago we were talking about a lot of things. Now I'm basically living back in Clearwater, Florida, God's paradise. It's not on this side of the planet. So was here this trip. I sold my house here in China. I sold my company a month and a half ago, so just finalizing all the details. We can talk about that as we go. So you asked me to go back and talk about the legal case that I had. We had talked about on the last time we met, the last podcast, and what was the outcome of that. So in the end, it took about a year and 8 months. I spent almost $100,000 and I won. So I spent $100,000 to win $250. So I think the end conclusion there is, in China, don't go through the legal system. You know, it's their legal system. It doesn't match our legal system. So, I mean, everything from evidence to the way thing you present, the way things are processed and timelines are all, I guess, looked at in a different format that we do. So that was basically the conclusion on that. I guess it goes back to principle. I think all of us in the U.S. or wherever we are, our parents raise us on principle. You know, always fight for what's right. I think the lesson is always fight for principle. But before you do, analyze, is the juice worth the squeeze? Which means, if you fight for what's right, what do you win? Right?
Good point. I know this is a sensitive topic, but yeah, last time we were talking about, this is the speaker business, your import-export company. Right. And you came here, you had been here 10 years?
Almost 15.
15 years. And business was going really well. And from the last time we talked, one of your higher level employees, I think, took the information and started his own company, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So you want me to talk about that?
Maybe, yeah.
Sure, okay. So, you know, basically I set up the company. I had key personnel, my vice president, and then a VP of engineering, and I was VP of janitor. Anyway, so, you know, we all worked as a team. But what happened was the VP of engineering and quality control decided that he wanted to make his own company. So basically, he took customer data, then took all of our technology and our patents and our trademarks, went out, copied them, and started selling those products back to our customers. So, you know, we could show that the trademarks were made and the patents were made before he even started with our company. We could show that those customers were our customers before he even started with the, with our company. We actually got some of our other customers to call him, order from him product, send it back to our lawyers without being opened so we could bring it to court and show that these were our products that he was sending out trying to sell, that we're copying our trademarks and our patents. So in the end, that was all irrelevant. What was there? There was never really a definitive reason why we only got $250. So I just told the judges to keep it and go buy themselves some beer because I didn't need it. You know, it was, in the end, I think it was a great experience. If I had to do it over again, would I do it? Probably. You know, you want to teach other people lessons, but I guess I still, you know, trying to learn from my own. But in the end, maybe we didn't win a lot of money from him, but each company that he sold to was subpoenaed. Everybody got notified of the lawsuit. They were notified in the U.S. They were, so he lost a ton of business and it cost him a lot of money. So in the end, did we punish him? Sure. Did we win anything really? Not really, but it was a waste of time. But in the end, I think it was a good learning experience. As you move forward, what fight to pick, what ones to just leave alone, right? You know, as far as the lawsuit, what other topics, you know, the way I, when we went into this lawsuit, I said, what was the actual term that I said? It was something like, if he was Jesus Christ and I was the Pope, I would still find him guilty, right? The amount of, we had 17,000 pages of documents, right? We got to make four copies for the court. So that's a truck pulling up, right? So in the end, as I say, legal in China, don't do it. Make your money. Hold your technology tight. If you're going to build a product that has high technology, make your pieces of your parts in one place and then assemble in a place that you can control, right? So you control that final assembly. Maybe it's a third party that you can trust. It's a Hong Kong company that you can get a contract that's based in Hong Kong. So there are any legalities, you can have a lawsuit in Hong Kong. Totally different than China, right? English law in Hong Kong, Chinese law in China. So that's really about it for the lawsuit side. The selling of the company, my senior VP that worked for me for 15 years, got a group of people together, came to me, made me an offer, you know, so do you work five more years or do you take that payout and go? So you take the payout and go. So I cut them a really fair deal. I think it was fair across the board. They have a good book of business, they'll do just fine. And they can grow the business because once I'm out of the equation, you take a big piece of fixed cost out, right? So once I'm out, there's a lot more room to maneuver. You can maneuver on your margins, your quantities. So there's a lot of other variables that you can manipulate once you reduce that fixed cost. So where else do you want to go?
Sure. This is already pretty amazing. You know, I just know the listeners. I know a lot of, not everyone, but I know a lot of people. I really like the show and they like the realness of it. You know, there's the next generation of sourcing and trading. So there's these Kickstarters, yep. There's these Amazon sellers, there's these guys, they're still, you know, they're putting in their heart and soul into their product-based business. They have their, you know, their ideas. And a lot of people say patent's worth nothing. Maybe trademark might be worth something. I mean, I just kind of want them to at least understand more like some thought process of how they can protect themselves in today's, you know, still got to deal with the Chinese factories. There's, you know, it's,
so you're talking about
I think a lot of, there's always the new fresh ones coming in and they still have to deal with these factories and
a lot of things.
Right. So,
okay. I got it. You know, I think it, coming to China right now, I mean, I still think there's a lot of opportunity. I think people with my old school business skill set, pretty difficult, unless you have a specific product that you can control. You know, the new guys coming here that are super technology savvy, right? That are thinking outside the box, that can find niche markets. You know, that's the way to do it. you know, but this is a country, like I said in the first time, you got to come prepared. That's a business plan. That's a budget. I mean, you can get caught up in things in this country that can cost you, can spend a lot more money than you ever thought you were going to spend. I don't think be scared. I think there's opportunity. And like we talked about, if it was easy, everyone would do it. You know, people ask me how I did it in the beginning years. I used to sleep on the factory floor in between production runs because if I knew if I went to bed, they'd take all the reject stuff, run it back down the line and put it in the container, right? So I wouldn't do it. I'd take 2 or 3 days. I'd be dirty and sloppy. I'd come home. But I knew when I put the lock on the container, nobody was going to open it. And everything in that container was good and my customer could sell it. So it's about the people that are willing to do the hard yard will be successful. If you think you can just dump something off on someone and expect them to do that product or that idea to your expectation, you're kidding yourself. So it's, again, back to opportunity. I think you have to create opportunity. You have to see it. And I think you have to surround yourself with friends. And here, I think you have to be careful of who your friends are. You know, it's always go by other people's recommendation. I mean, the best thing for someone coming here is trying to hook up with someone that's either referred or, you know, has some credible background that you can check. I don't know how you guys do that. I know there's ways to do it online now, but somebody that has some credibility that can help you. It's a totally different world. When I came here, I was the odd white guy that walked around town, right? Now there's too many of us, but anyway, if there's opportunity, come do it, but bring a plan and stick to it and work hard. Otherwise it's failure. So, you know, we've seen over the years, so many people come here. I'm going to make $1 million this year. Great. Right. And 9 months later, they're calling mom and dad to get a ticket home. Right. So you got to come and be, I think it's, you know, it's a mature thing. You come here, you have to know what you're doing. Right. And this isn't a playground. So you can come here in a playground and all your money will be gone really quick. So I hope that's enough on that topic. Anything else I should discuss there?
Sure. I mean, I think a lot of them are in China. They're very good marketers. You know, of course, we know Marshall and others have been on the show and sure. They're not, but a lot of them aren't here. Or maybe they just fly here once a year for trade shows.
Right.
What do they do? I guess find partners that are quality control and third party.
I think there's a couple of options there. You know, throughout all my years in going to trade shows, none of the factories that I worked with were in trade shows because all their people, and we had people that were in were Polk and Klipsch and PSB and Paradigm and Sonant, Speakercraft, Niles, were all in these factories and they didn't want the factory going to the show and showing their products, right? So two options. Number one, if you go to a trade show and you're going to buy something from somebody, I want 4 referrals of customers in 4 different countries, right? I want to be able to ask them and talk to them. Number one. Number two, go and see the factory. Most people at trade shows are rep companies or trading companies. If you want to get to the bottom of it, say, okay, hey, let's on Friday go to your factory and just watch the expression on their face. For when you say that sentence, look right in their eyes and you'll see either, oh, shit, or okay, no problem, right? It's a quick tell. So you got to learn. It's basically doing your due diligence on every single thing that you do here, right? People are like, hey, send me your drawings. We'll give you a quote. Well, who are you? Right? Do I get an NDA? Does that NDA really matter here? Probably not. So I think it's about being cautious with your information, but also checking with who you're dealing with. You know, I found a lot of good Taiwanese factories. There's good Chinese factories, but there's good Taiwanese, there's Japanese, there's opportunity. Japanese are very difficult to get into, but there's never just one option. So always look for other options for what you're trying to do.
Great, great. And probably work with a Westerner or some, at least maybe a Chinese has studied overseas, understands the culture a little bit at least, so they know your mindset. It's really difficult, I think, if you're not on the ground in China.
Sure. I think the key thing is finding one person that you can trust in China, and that will be the single most hard thing that you have to do. I'm very fortunate. Kitty Long. Thank you, Kitty. You know, work with me for 15 years. You know, when I first, you know, got out of the factory and I was staying in the dormitories in the factory, got it my first order, got a little apartment. She started doing the books on the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays. She'd come to my house because my house was house, office, storeroom, all in one. And, you know, it took her about a year and a half to come to work for me full time. And I was paying three times the wage, right? This was probably 04 and I was paying her 12,000 a month RMB. Wow. Right. So finally I said, you know what? A couple of years ago, I'm like, Kitty, you know, why did it take so long for you to come on full time? She said, I didn't think you were going to make it. Cause she was doing my books. Right. Yeah. I'm like, oh, cause I thought I was going to make it. Didn't know it was that close. So I truly believe it's finding someone you can trust. And that is super hard. I mean, just today I signed over power of attorney for her to sell my house here. Right. That's trust, bro. That's big money. That's trust. So how do you find someone you can trust? That's a difficult question. And I don't know that I know the answer. I think it's test. You know, for me, I did kind of odd things in my company with employees. I kind of left bait, if you will, testing people. And it wasn't like I left cash on the counter. It was specific things in their job. Do they catch it? Do they let it pass? Do they, right? Mm. But I also let them know that I was doing it. Mm. Right? So it's kind of a, you watch me, I'll watch you. But yeah, man, I wish I had the secret to that recipe, man, for everybody to have someone they can trust. And, you know, listen, it's not to say that the Chinese are distrustful. Every culture is different. There's good and bad in every culture. You cannot stereotype. There are some awesome people here. So you just have to find it. If it's an expat, you know, before you tie in and basically get in bed with an expat in business, ask around, do your homework, do your research, get referrals from him. Mm-hmm. Who else has he helped? What other businesses is he part of, right? Where does he hang out? Go have a beer with him. You can tell by the people that come up and talk to him or hang out with him. That's a lot of, you know, like you guys, you know. I always see you guys together. We all know you guys are talking tech, so we're trying to listen to what you're doing. Like, what are the young guys doing? So it's trying to find those people in that group that you can get in to where, I mean, the way you guys do it, you guys get together and help each other,
yeah.
Right? Nobody's benefiting financially from each other. You guys are there to support each other. And that's an awesome way to do it, man.
Sure. So there's more and more groups online and, you know, trying to help each other and, right. And with social media, is also can be ways to find people. And, sure. You know, like when you were here, even when I was first getting here, the internet was nothing, even in the West. But, you know, now there's so much information online and I'm sure people can find a lot. So you mentioned the house, real estate. We don't usually talk, you know, we usually stay on more of the business side, but I'm curious a little bit about real estate transactions here. So you're selling, you sold.
Yeah. It's the contracts here will close in March 26. So I bought my house in 03. Anyway, I bought quite a few houses here in 03, 04. And a lot of this stuff was either on paper or just breaking ground. So the first house, I came down to Sherco once they started filling in all the ocean here. We were playing football on the sand and I saw this place being built. I thought, I'll walk over there. Walked over there and talked to the people a little bit. They didn't understand much English. I just said, you know, point to my eyes. I want to go see. So they took me up it was the outside elevator, right? That runs up the building, that red thing. My buddy's throwing up. But anyway, so we go up 18th floor, look around. This is great. Go down. Okay. What do I have to do? Oh, you have to get a number. I said, okay, what do I have to do? 10,000 RMB. Okay. I just went and got the money, gave him 10,000, got a number. I was 86. So in China, when they sell a property, you have to get in line to get a number. So once you get a number, that's how you pick your property based on that number. Number one gets number one pick. Number two gets number two pick. But if they have three or four different sizes, then that's how it's done, right? If you pick A size, then all the A's go together, then, right, they're split up. So in the end, the second property I bought, which I had, I used Standard and Chartered, and I became friends with the lady, and I said, if any more come up, let me know. She called me and said, oh, Peninsula's going to start on Sunday. So I said, Kitty, can you find a couple to go stand in line from Friday night to Sunday morning? I'll pay her $200. So they went and stood in line from Friday afternoon outside this building until Sunday morning at 10. I come there. There's 500 people in line around the building. I walk right up to the front. I get in line. Well, what they had done is there was two of them. So they had gotten, I got one number one and two. They got number three and four. I took my one and two, went in. They turned right around and sold those two numbers for 100,000 RMB. Oh. So they made, so they were like, thanks for the, right? So it's playing that game. But, you know, okay, so now let's get back to today. You know, back then things were inexpensive, super inexpensive, right? So today down the street, things are selling anywhere between $3,000 and $4,000 a square foot, right? So, you know, it's time to bail. So I sold the company. It's time for me to check out. And listen, it was a great experience. I thank China for the American dream, but it's time for me to go fishing. So I'll always be here to support you guys, help with anything you need. But so anyway, it's time to sell. So I put my house on the market. In 1 hour, the first couple came and looked at it, walked downstairs. They said, we want it. I said, okay, great. They said, but we want to talk. I said, no talking. The number's a number because the people next to me upstairs want to look at my house in an hour. They're like, okay. They signed the document. First person, 1 hour. So did I sell too cheap? Anyway, so anyway, just take the money and run, pay Mr. Obama his share and go enjoy life. But to invest in property in Shenzhen right now, man, actually, Trump may buy you a house here now, but the cost of living here is astronomical. And Marcus and I were talking just this morning, you know, foreigners can't afford to live in Sherco anymore because the costs are so high, the rents are so high, they're all going to be forced out, yeah. Right? We were talking about that was the brilliance of, you know, of China Merchants building here, SeaWorld. You know, we look at the prices in SeaWorld of food, right? A hamburger is 95 RMB. What is that? $17, yeah. Right? So Marcus is like, but all the rich people live here. I'm like, yeah, I get it now. Because, you know, the people that can afford those houses. But I think Sherco and Shenzhen is going to continue to grow because it is such a little niche market for all of China where the weather's good, right? The air is cleaner. You're close to Hong Kong by ferry, train, or by bridge, yeah. Bus, right? So they all want to get out. And if they have the money, they're going to get here. Well, out of 1.3 billion people, let's say Shenzhen has what? 1 million apartments? 2 million apartments? So supply and demand, right? So yeah, man, it's been good to me, but it's just time to go. But the process here, I would say that the China legal process for real estate is excellent. I would say it's as good, if not better than ours. You know, buy one in Thailand like I did. You know, Thailand's these 14-page documents with not one word of English. Even your name's not in English, right? It's not ownership, it's lease. But here, it's 90-year lease, but it's still a title. You get a title, right? You can get a mortgage. It's the process of selling is the same process of steps, right? So here, yeah, investing in property, if you want to do it because the legal system is excellent. You're not going to get any problem.
That's good. That's good. The company sale, I think it was a Hong Kong company.
Yeah. So Global Brands Development was a Hong Kong company. I started in 2000 and, you know, we ran 15 years. We never bounced a check. We were never late on a payment. We never did anything wrong. You know, so our history is excellent. My senior VP and a couple other employees got together and made me an offer. And it probably took us about 3 days to hammer out the details. We notified Standard and Chartered of the sale. We notified IU's boardroom in Hong Kong. We notified them. The whole sale, everything took less than 2 hours. Sign the documents at the bank and go over and sign the documents at boardroom. Was done. Wow. So it'll work out, man. It was just time for me to move on. But, you know, I'll always, like I said, I'll always be here to talk because I love it, right? But it's time for me to go, you know, get some shrimp and some cold beer, go fishing. In Clearwater, if you guys are down there, by the way.
Yeah, sure. Cool, Steve. Yeah. So that's, I know you're, enjoy your time. Maybe some shrimp in Shenzhen. We can go later. But how can people reach out to you or check out what you're doing?
Wow. You know, it's kind of funny. You know, I'm back in the US. I've been off the grid 15 years, right? So I go back to the US. I started buying foreclosed real estate and flipping it because I needed something to do. So what did I do? I opened a bank account, right? Put in all my information. And I go into Home Depot. I want to open a corporate card at Home Depot, right? So I can purchase products and have a list. And so I start, there's, okay, what's your name? My name's Steve Marsh. I said, my phone number is, it's like, oh, we already have everything. I'm like, huh? Yeah, you're already in the system. So I don't know how they share data, right? Yeah. That was freaky. You know, I'm Steve Marsh on Facebook. I'm still getting okay at it, guys. I'm not the best at it. Communicate there with me any time you want. My email is steve@stephenmarsh.com, steve@stephenmarsh.com. I mean, send me an email, keep in touch, but if I can help in any way, you know, that's more interesting to me now to trying to help somebody else do what I did. So anyway, just come to Clearwater and ring a fishing pole. Actually, I got plenty. So, but man, what other questions you got? Come on, listen.
I think it's good. It's good.
Okay. All right, man. Well, anything else you got? Let's we can do on Skype, right?
Yeah, sure.
We can always Skype me. If people send you questions, then you can.
Yeah, we can take questions from listeners. Yeah. Well, maybe we can do this regularly.
Sure, man. I'm in the U.S.
Okay.
You can Skype me at my place. No problem.
All right, great.
So what is today? January 22nd, right?
February 23rd.
January. Okay, I've been traveling too much. I want to go home.
Okay. Cool.
All right, man. Take care. Right. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, guys. Wow, thanks, Steve. That was some of that was a little bit hard for me to keep up. My interview is really, really heart to heart there. And, you know, I wish you the best. And I'm glad. I want to get you back. Let's get some questions from listeners, and either they can send them to you or to me, and we can get you back on a show. You know, it's just sometimes difficult. We got to watch our backs. And at the same time, we want to keep an open mind and give everybody the benefit of the doubt. So it's a fine line, but I still try to kind of be on the more open-minded side. So thanks again, and we'll probably have you on again, Steve. Thank you, as always. So check my iTunes reviews. No new ones. We did get a burst of a few in February. So if you're listening today and you're enjoying this and you haven't yet taken a little bit of time to try to do some iTunes reviews, it's a quick way to thank me and help the show get found. Supposedly the Apple gods tell me that they weigh the ratings higher so that people can find it and benefit. So thanks, everybody. Keep your heads up high. Keep pushing forward your global business. And I will see you next week. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.